Hey y'all, it's been a while since last episode. Sometimes, as we know in the circus world, we have to roll with the punches and change action plans. Now, I'm excited to get back here and drop the second episode for you. I'm Emil Soicher-Clark, and thanks for joining me for this discussion of unpacking injury in circus, flying with excess baggage. Now, last episode, we left off discussing baggage of circus injuries and what's in our suitcase. Now, just a quick recap of the findings of my study. I found that with my participants and my own experience, the decisions around injury management could be complicated by situational factors experienced prior and during injury, in addition to the physical aspects of the injury sustained by a performer. To frame this discussion, I like to use a neat little analogy. Injuries are kind of like traveling with baggage on a vacation. When we get injured, we tend to carry baggage that we packed prior. Now, pretend that you're going on a sunny vacation, and you're trying to keep that baggage minimal. What's in that baggage that we carry? We could carry our past experiences, beliefs, attitudes, and it can impact our perceptions. Now, our bodies also physically have to carry it. And also, I would assume that we packed our bags ourselves and we keep it in our possession at all times with us at the airport. What if others have access to that bag and can tamper with the contents inside? We pack our bags expecting that the weather is going to be gorgeous and sunny, but you also pack for adverse weather. You prepare and anticipate, or we should, that there's a chance that it could storm while we're on our trip. I like to think of the same thing goes with injuries while performing. When it storms or you get hurt, are you prepared with the things you have in that baggage? Or is the baggage weighing you down and becoming a burden? On one hand, we don't want to prepare for absolutely everything that could happen while on vacation, but we do want to have just enough that keeps our baggage minimal, but prepared for events that could happen by chance, kind of like that of injuries. So I have a lovely guest with me today. As we're recording, we decided to take a little bit more of a conversational approach compared to what Stacy and I did in the prior episode. I hope you enjoy what we have to offer, and as always, please reach out. We love hearing from you. Today, for this segment, I'm here with Renee Mack, who is a multidisciplinary artist residing in Vancouver, Canada. Now, Renee, tell me about your trajectory starting circus, and what was that like? Because in talking about it a little bit before we recorded the podcast, it's rather unconventional for the average circus performer. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, so how do I begin? I started circus late. I think I was maybe 23, 24, and it wasn't even so much I started circus transitioning from another athletic background. I have absolutely zero athletic background, no dance, no gymnastics, no physical kind of training at all. And it was something that I had always wanted to do when I was younger, and it just wasn't accessible to me, so it was only available to me when I became an adult and I used my own money to put myself through circus classes. And circus, you know, if you ask me why I chose circus, there's no definitive reason as to why. It was more just, at the time, I was struggling with body dysmorphia, disordered eating, and I just wanted something fun to be able to help me lose weight, essentially. And I remember on a whim in Toronto, I looked up trapeze classes, and that's how it began, and it's just kind of like the rest is history from there. So I started at a much older age. I started as a recreational artist, and it was just through all of the time that I spent training and all of the people that I met, it just became such an integral part of who I am, part of my identity as an artist as well. And even when I started circus, I wasn't an artist at all in any capacity. So it's kind of through this 10-11 year journey that I've become not only a circus artist, I've also become a visual artist. So it's just this really fascinating journey that I've taken. But all that to say, I have a bit more of a non-traditional pathway, which a lot of folks have this quote-unquote non-traditional pathway where they started much later in life. They may or may not have had a lot of athletic training in previous years. And you know, it's kind of breaking the stereotype that not all of us started gymnastics at 4 years old and were competitive gymnasts or rhythmic gymnasts. There's a lot more diversity in circus than the average person is aware of. So him. It's a bit about me and my journey.
Well, it's interesting because it's diversity of our background of how we became performers or previous performers, but also the diversity in itself, in the disciplines, in walks of life, in different abilities. That's a
Exactly.
very good thing to keep in mind because I think a lot of us, we do come from that kind of traditional. We went through sport and then you find a little passion project that becomes sort of a way of life in a way. So that's really inspiring though. Coming from adulthood and moving into something that is like a very physical space and something that is very rigorous.
I mean, I'm kind of a believer that anything is possible in this life with enough time and tenacity. I believe that us as humans, we're capable of so much, and it's really our own social constructs of like, you have to have started this at this age in order to become an expert at it, or our narratives that we tell ourselves. And I like to be able to dispel that because really, like, any of us are capable of doing anything. If you and I wanted to learn carpentry, for example, we could do it. It's just time and practice and effort. That's all it is.
Of course. Well, there's definitely a crossover of visual arts and performing arts. I definitely know in my perspective, coming from the world of arts and going more into an empirical science realm, I didn't really realize how many crossovers there were and how much room there is for interdisciplinary work. So it seems like that's something that's really in your wheelhouse. And so you mentioned visual art, but you also do a lot of interdisciplinary work with other performers, visual artists, drag queens, stuff like that. There are quite a few projects that I've heard about. Can you tell me a bit about them?
So my last project, it's called Slanted. It's a film, a show, art project that is meant to explore specifically the Asian diasporic experience. And I like to identify the diasporic experience than the native experience, just because people who are like second, third generation Asians growing up in mostly westernized countries, our experiences are very different than those of our counterparts who still live in Asia, or those who, they grew up with most of their formative years in East Asia and then came to a Western nation. Its experiences are very different. So in this project, I explore a lot of those things. And I remember when I was developing the concepts with my friend who is also in the show. She's the contortionist in the show. We really wanted to, like, I had a vision to have more multidisciplinary work in there. And what that multidisciplinary work looked like at the time, I wasn't really sure when I was in early concepts of this project. I just knew, in the city that I'm located in Vancouver as a locale, we have incredible theater, we have incredible drag artists, we have incredible burlesque artists, but we're all siloed. And this work, we're very adjacent to one another, and there's many intersections, and sometimes we collaborate, but not as often as I think would be really valuable for all of our industries. So it was like that I really wanted to make sure that it was multidisciplinary, not just in the sense of multidisciplinary within circus disciplines, but multidisciplinary in terms of crossing art forms. And there's a particular drag group called House of Rice that is operating in Vancouver, and they're an all-Asian drag group. And just the work that they were already doing about lifting Asian voices, I was just so inspired by that. So I wanted to invite those artists to be part of the show as well. And that's kind of the inception of like how that multidisciplinary show across art forms came to be. And yeah, I'm hoping in the future to be able to integrate more burlesque, more theater as well. Probably going to need to take a bit more theater training myself in order to step into that space. But yeah, I just think there's so much opportunity there.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think there's so much latitude in this world that sometimes we get stuck in, myself, I did trampoline, I did teeterboard, but there's this whole other realm where different artists can kind of work together and create something and give a different angle, give a different perspective that I think is a really beautiful way to convey a story and a really beautiful way to evoke a reaction or to evoke inspiration with an audience and as a cast together as well. That's one of the beautiful things of circus is realizing they have a different experience and they have abilities that we can all learn from. We can learn from each other, and that's one of the really collaborative aspects of circus. So let's talk about some baggage.
Do
If you'd like to start off, what's in your suitcase, or what is in other people's suitcases that you've noticed?
Oh boy, my suitcase is a super heavy one that definitely needs to like be checked in. It's not like carry-on baggage. Where do I even begin? I guess around the physical injury part. And I find this kind of an interesting conversation topic because I, for myself, and I think this is probably true of a lot of people, is that physical and mental injury cannot be decoupled. And we often treat it as if it's decoupled because there's still a lot of stigma around mental health. But the reality is that it's always like a cycle that feeds each other. So physical injury can create mental injury, and vice versa. Mental injury can create physical injuries. Is this ever cycle, vicious circle in many ways? For myself, I know we've talked about this before as part of some of the other work that you've been doing around transient injury as well as just injury itself. And to give a little bit of background, I had a pretty traumatic spinal injury around 2016. And the biggest challenge of it is that the origins of it were quite fuzzy. Because same time in my life, I was going through quite a traumatic personal experience as well. So it was one of those like chicken and egg scenarios where it's kind of, was the traumatic personal experience that was creating a lot of mental trauma, create an environment that made it really ripe for the physical injury to happen, or vice versa. I don't think it's valuable to try to find out the root cause because the situation just is what it is. The origins of which are fuzzy, and just able to understand how to learn from it and manage it in the future. So all that to say is my physical injury, it took me a long time to really determine what it was. I have what's called bilateral spondylolisthesis. When this injury happened, because I was going through all this personal stuff in my life, I didn't take care of myself. I didn't go to a doctor. All I knew was just my back is in debilitating pain. I can barely put on pants. And I just wasn't taking care of myself in any kind of regard, mentally, physically. So what I think happened is that because I never took care of it properly, I created an environment that made it really ripe for a long-standing chronic back issue to. So instead of if you break your arm, you go to the hospital and you get a cast on it right away. So in this case, I fractured my spine. I didn't know I fractured my spine. I kept living life. I kept trying to push through training. And in doing so, I created an environment where my body developed all these ways to try to protect itself. I created a lot of ways to introduce pathways to my body to protect itself, but pathways that will create further issues in the future.
A lot of performers, depending on your discipline, depending on your physical capabilities or limitations that you have, that those things can kind of creep up. And therein lies, like you said, that scenario of what's the cause. It's funny homage to in science, there's not a lot of causation out there because there's so many individual variables that contribute and affect and impact the outcome. So it's really hard to kind of establish, okay, well, what caused that? Well, the origins are of that injury are kind of blurry. Can you kind of walk me through what swam through your mind?
Devastating, I think, is the best way to put it because circus was one of those things that became so empowering for me because it really helped me heal the relationship that I had with my body. And that's like a loaded thing because it also created body dysmorphia and disordered eating. So in many ways, it helped me to view myself as instead of being like wanting to be the skinniest possible, I wanted to be the strongest possible. And through all of my hard work and tenacity is I developed that strength to be able to do these feats that I never had been able to do before. To suddenly have that taken away from you where because it was so painful. So it's like to go from, I was formerly an aerialist, go from, doing drops on aerial hoops and doing these physical feats to not even being able to do something as simple as child's pose. It's soul crushing. It feels like your identity is being taken away, but it also feels like all of your hard work is just gone. It's just stripped.
Absolutely. When those things occur, it feels like something's taken from you, that integral, inscribed piece of your identity. But it's incredible though how you have the ability to, maybe there are physical limitations per se that you kind of have to pivot or find new apparatus. But it's incredible that there's an ability to kind of look at that, and I'm sure that's it's a process of grieving, but at the same time finding a way to kind of pivot and adapt a discipline or find a new discipline. It's a really inspiring piece of the circus world that I think you embody incredibly.
Thank you. I appreciate
It
that.
kind of seems like if we have to deal with a chronic condition, that the body kind of holds on to that pain and trauma, be it emotional or physical, and it's sort of our body kind of it sort of keeps track. It kind of has a score sheet.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think it goes back to that concept of the cyclical nature of physical and non-physical trauma, and not really understanding where things can originate from. And our bodies are incredible powerhouses that just hold on to things. I remember my sister's a yoga teacher, and I remember doing this class with her one time, and it happened to have a lot of hip openers, and for no apparent reason, seemingly, I like burst into tears at the end of the class. I remember telling my sister this, and I'm like, that was a really weird experience. And she just like nonchalantly, she's like, well, that's because our hips store so much emotional space in our bodies. And that's just a concept that's kind of like well known, the space that she works in. And for me, I'm kind of like, okay, cool. Okay, emotional powerhouses of the body. And I think like we often have this disconnect that our bodies are our physical form, and then our minds are our mental form, but these hold on to all of those like emotions as well. And it's really, really important when you get injured, I think it's important to take stock of all of the baggage that you might be carrying with you to really just kind of have a better understanding of how did this injury happen? And then from there, how do you manage this injury in the future? So even if you injury, something happens, it's kind of understanding the baggage of like, was there something that created an environment for this acute injury to happen more likely? So it's stoicism, for example, our pride, like too much pride can cause a moment of injury where it's kind of like, I'm going to keep trying to do this thing even though I'm physically tired because my pride is getting in the way, and that does create it creates an environment ready for injury, right? So it seems like an acute physical thing that's happening. There could be other factors that have been layered in to create that environment for it to happen.
It sounds kind of like a cycle of harm where an injury can lead to more if it's not
Oh yeah.
addressed. So in your experience, did you speak about it with people in the past things that you've gone through, or how did you make it known?
I didn't make it known. And that was a lot of it is because I held a lot of shame about being injured. And again, at the same time, I was going through something deeply personal that I also held a lot of shame around. It's just, I just had this back thing and my back hurt. And it took me a long time to start to express to people that, hey, like, I have a back injury. And felt a lot of shame around the way that people would perceive me because, like, as a circus artist who still does these physical feats, even through the pain, I had this concern that people would think that I was pretending that I had this injury. So I didn't even talk about it. And I think it's like we can create the cycle of injury because we're ashamed of the injury, we try to pursue it. And we don't deal with kind of the mental trauma that happens with an injury as well, and then it just continues to create this vicious cycle.
Yeah, it's well, I look back and I think, I mean, it's just a show. It's just a live performance. It's vulnerable to begin with, so it's, I sometimes wonder why I held back on, felt like it was the only thing in the world, the only thing that mattered at that point, if something were to happen or if I was experiencing pain. You mentioned stoicism related to your injuries. Can you tell me a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, stoicism is an interesting thing because I think I haven't met an athlete that doesn't have a struggle with stoicism, and it's part and parcel of just athleticism, wanting to perform your best, whether it's athleticism as a more classical athlete or athleticism in more as an artistic athlete such as Lucas. It's just this thing that we hold on to that we want to do our best, so we push through. And it's that kind of that whole the show must go on, which I think is actually a very damaging perspective because we don't always have to go on if it's at the expense of somebody's physical and mental health. Nothing in life is ever that important that the show must go on. And the thing with stoicism is when we hold it so deeply as a value, and this is something I struggle with a lot because I really value myself on how resilient I am and how I'm able to push through anything life throws at me. But it's what can actually happen when we embody this value too much is that it can delay our mental and our physical recovery because we keep trying to push through as opposed to just slow down, take stock of what's happened.
Absolutely. Well, with ourselves, but to show that to other people, what holds us back?
Yeah. Like, no audience member is never going to be like, how dare you? We tell ourselves that. Like, no one in it is going to be like, oh, I'm so upset I bought a ticket and you're injured and you're not, I'm not entertained enough. That's our own narrative.
But where do we put that pressure? Is it internally, or is it to prove something to ourselves, or to prove something to others? And who are those others?
It's so layered. I think stoicism, it's really complex and it can have both internal as well as external. So it's internally just as a personality, you may have developed this just through the way you were raised. Maybe it's kind of you were raised in an environment where you were always trying to impress your parents, and then this like carries as you become an adult in any kind of aspect of a discipline that you practice, whether it's like circus in this case, or your work, for example. And then there's external influences as well, where it could be the culture that you grew up in that has a how you on the concept of stoicism. It could be the culture that is created that can impact this as well. So it just becomes this really layered thing. And again, I think it's one of these things where like, is it important to understand the origin of it? It helps us be able to critically think about things a little bit more. But at the end, if you struggle with stoicism, you just struggle with it. And while it can be valuable to understand the origins of it, it's more just like valuable just to be like, okay, this is the thing that I struggle with. Let's unpack it and see if I can reach like a more balanced way to approach my life.
Absolutely. From a kind of cross-cultural perspective, I mean, I look at circus as kind of a subculture or a informal subculture as an industry. And even in that, there's different parts of the industry. You have folks doing gig work that's more locally based. You have resident shows, you have shows doing, there's so many aspects of the subculture, but then there's also those cultural elements that make the context of the situation.
At our core, we hold back because we don't want to be perceived as not enough. We want to be perceived as enough. And when you're in an industry like circus, where your work is this physical discipline that people pay to come see, like they pay to come to do this thing, suddenly when you're struggling to do the thing that people pay to come see, it triggers your core sense of not feeling like enough. I can't say that this is maybe not everybody resonates with that. This could be my own lived experiences with kind of the things that I struggle with. It's like as somebody who also has a bit of a non-traditional pathway into circus, Don't have a gymnastics background or a dance background, didn't sit in like a formal school for circus. Like I have very varied educational formation. Also that like I'm not enough to be considered a real circus artist. Wow, it's such a good layered thing where it comes down to these narratives that we tell ourselves. Really, at the end of the day, who are we trying to impress? Are we trying to impress other people or are we trying to impress ourselves?
That's a very good point. I mean, and who are we trying to prove what to? Ourselves or for an audience, a director, a coach, our cast members? It's also personal.
An audience member, are they going to remember you in a month?
Maybe they'll remember that person that they did something and it looked like they landed and it was quite painful. And I maybe they remembered the empathy that they felt. For that
Maybe.
person that professionally handled it, or that had to step off stage, or that person that had to kind of modify their act in order to not hurt themselves further. Let's put it this way. Generally, I think that there is a bit of taboo around injuries, which is kind of one of my missions, is to create a space for the discussion of those injuries or the things that we're struggling with. I'll use a bit of an analogy because I'm under the belief that feeling like an imposter. I remember thinking back on my experience. It's almost as if an injury confirmed that I wasn't enough, or that I wasn't good enough, and that I was weak. In your perspective, do you think that that might be more common than maybe we think in those moments?
Oh, definitely. And I think there's kind of two layers to it where it could be the imposter comes from, oh my God, I got injured because I'm good enough. There's that layer of the imposter. And then there's the imposter is like, oh my God, I'm injured. I'm never going to be good enough. There's always like pressure to just keep performing and we're gonna do it because like there's all these layers of like we don't want to miss out on the work, we don't want to miss out on the experience, we don't want people to like not good enough, and then like we create this cyclical thing where it's like in a real life scenario if that were to happen in that act like we would just get further injured because we're training and on an injury.
You mentioned culture and the way in which you're raised.
So for context, I'm Chinese Canadian and I've been kind of doing a lot of reflection on like my identity and where I come from in the past few years, and it's just like for my entire life, stoicism has been such an integral part, and I really believe it comes from kind of culture. Like stoicism is even a concept in Confucianism, which is like a popular frame of thinking in Chinese culture. I think about just like the way I was raised, with like be strong. Don't cry and like work hard and just and I carried this with me through everything in my life. Like the physical and mental traumas I've been through, I've carried this through and like I pride myself on independence and resilience because I don't let people help me and I allow situations that are deeply traumatizing to just sink in. It's more just you're strong, get through this. I think it is important just to kind of, like I do think it's important to audit our baggage and to understand where it comes from. Just to have a good understanding of it isn't going to just magically heal, but just understanding where it comes from helps us to be able to manage that experience a little bit more.
Absolutely. You mentioned an emphasis on being productive a couple times.
Oh yeah, that's, I feel like that's another thing that could be again. Internal, external. So it's like it could be personality, the way they developed through a variety of factors that they just like want to be productive. And then there's also the external culture, Chinese culture. It's like there's a large emphasis on work ethic and just producing a lot. So this kind of comes is closely tied to imposter syndrome as well, where it's the need to be productive so as not to be as an imposter comes in. And it's so layered. Also in North America, we live in a hustle culture where people expect you to always be doing so many things. So even like circus, is it okay to just focus on one discipline or
I
multidisciplinary?
think we all kind of want to do more, and we strive to optimize that and strive to increase our acrobatic level or.
When it comes to productivity and stoicism, where on the spectrum we lie, because then if we know we're on kind of like the far end of the spectrum where I take stoicism and productivity like way too seriously. When we're training, we need to keep that in mind, just so then like we're reminding ourselves, hey, like you know that you have this trait that's a little bit too on the far end. When you are training, you don't push yourself to the point of where you're going to set yourself up for mental and physical injury. So where you live on that spectrum can give you a little bit more insight to approaching your training in a healthier manner.
I think a lot of things that we're talking about, it sounds like we need to, well, have more self-compassion and listen to our bodies more.
Yes. But we don't. We often don't, right?
And I think of the barriers of why we hold back. We have this current state that the circus industry is in related to injuries. And I like to think of it as our bodies are a currency. Our livelihood is in our physical ability. That's how we make money in contracts. That's our livelihood. That's our profession. Generally speaking, there are some issues that we're facing in the circus community. Our relationship with injuries, our relationship with sometimes feeling like an imposter or trying to kind of stoically push through when maybe it's not the most appropriate time to do that. In your perspective and in your experience, what do you think could remedy that? I'm trying to kind of think, how can we make it so folks can perform longer in better health?
That's an interesting one. I immediately think about individual level. That's something that we can start to take control of. It's more challenging when you're looking at it at a more macro scale. So if you're somebody who's touring, you're in a big show, which, you know, full disclosure, I've never had those experiences before, to have the pressure of like the show is here, you're hired by the show, you have to show up. It gets more, there needs to be a bit of a cultural shift then. Whether that means just being like having the leniency for performers to be injured, people are going to get injured inevitably. So it's what's your backup plan if that happens? And is the culture of the show going to be supportive of that? Are people going to feel supported to show up and be like, hey, like I'm injured, can we revert to plan B? It's like leniency where it's like if you don't feel good, take the day off. In the circus industry, like there's that pressure where like you're the only person who can do this act, you can't take the day off.
One of the big things is those employment fears, having fear of our employment. You know, well, if I'm injured too many times, or if I am injured, then maybe I'm a liability to that show, to that company. Innately, there are employment fears that we have. I think of, oh, when I got injured, what flew through my mind was, I'm gonna lose my job. Or they're gonna think I'm weak or incapable, and they're gonna fire me. Which is terrifying. And but at the same time, when we view other people's injuries, we have compassion. Or I can only speak for myself, but I have compassion for that person that got injured and respect if they say, like, hey, I need you to take over something, because those things happen and we know what that feels like. But do we offer that same latitude that we give to other people to ourselves?
No, we don't. It's easy to have compassion for others. It's so much harder to have compassion for ourselves.
Well, Renee, I can't thank you enough for taking part in this. We're just about wrapping up. You've given a lot of food for thought. It's a lot for us to reflect on and kind of think about it. I like to kind of throw this in there. I know that your sister, Kate, is a really incredible yoga instructor, who's my favorite yoga instructor. And she likes to kind of give the last 5 minutes before you have your adult nap time, the shavasana. Last 5 minutes, do whatever pose we may not have done during the class that you feel like you want to do, you want to touch on, or you want to elaborate on, or try something different. So, last 5 minutes before the shavasana, is there anything else that you feel we haven't talked about that you feel is important to discuss? Anything that stuck out with you that you're like, ooh, light bulb, I want to chat about this?
The biggest takeaway I want people to walk away with is I think narratives that's like, I'm not good enough, I'm an imposter. Like, these are the biggest injuries that we actually create for ourselves. And I think it's important for people to kind of take stock of that because I'm a huge believer that physical and non-physical injury are just so tightly intertwined. You cannot decouple. So when you're telling yourself these narratives all the time, is just taking stock and like, am I creating an environment that's actually going to predispose me to the physical injury to happen, which is then going to predispose you to the mental injury, and then it just keeps happening. So I really want people to kind of take stock and audit their narratives and just understand how it contributes to the way that they approach their disciplines.
That's very poignant. I never really thought of the narrative itself. Is that part of the injury, or is that something else that we hang on to? It's interesting because I come from this thought that even before the interview and talking to you, is that injuries or our previous experiences are our baggage, but not necessarily that injury currently. It's like we kind of have our personal shtick and we have the situational shtick, and then it's as if that situation, there's kind of the previous part of the situation, but then there's the current. But what if that injury, that's also an injury in itself? It's
exactly
that I don't trust when my body is trying to tell me no. This is all so poignant, and Renee, I can't thank you enough for this is really, really lovely, and just thank you so much for diving in and telling us of your perspective and experience. That one other thing I'm kind of thinking is not necessarily remedies, but you'd mentioned there's the industry itself maybe geared towards the show environment. What do you think we can do better in relation to injuries? Do we allow ourselves the safe space to discuss injuries and be open and honest to other people as well as ourselves?
Yeah, I think that's, again, like having no experience in a touring show, I think we have to create the spaces at a macro cultural level. And I can at least speak to this kind of some my experiences of like working in another industry. Mental health is talked about a lot. Again, like self, I don't decouple physical and mental health. They are completely integrated for me. So the other industry that I work in, we're permitted the latitude to be able to really be open and honest about where we are mentally. And this creates even more because of the pandemic, where obviously people are experiencing quite a lot of challenges. And I think it's just about the folks who are in leadership roles who are responsible for creating those company cultures and even industry cultures. We have to continue to have these conversations where it's like, you know, encourage people to be okay with the fact that injury is going to happen. Take stock of the fact that, like, you have to take care of yourself. You have to reflect on these narratives that are going to predispose you to injury. And it's like, when we do this deeper work, we're going to create an industry as a whole, whether it's gig work, whether it's show work, that's a little bit more open to the fact that you're an athlete, you're going to get injured. You're also going to recover. So it's like, how do we support people in that initial injury state and then in that recovery state as well? And that recovery state is both the physical and the mental recovery state. Like, if people are going to fear losing their work, you might have to be replaced in a show, but it's like, how can we help to make people feel that they're still valued and that they're still going to have work after when they've recovered?
Yeah. How do we approach this with self-compassion too, as well as compassion with others?
Yeah.
It's funny, I use this top-down, bottom-up analogy of, think of the bottom-up process being the individual themselves. I think we have to make steps to create the environment that we want. At the same time, you have this top-down perspective, which are the decision-makers, the leaders, the coaches, directors, or directors of that certain event. I think we both have a responsibility, and both should kind of reconcile. It's not just a company's responsibility. It's also our own, and it's not just our responsibility.
I just wanted to thank you for this opportunity. It's really nice to be considered to talk about the subject.
It's my pleasure. Renee, do you have any, are there any handles if people want to reach out, or social media platforms, stuff like that,
absolutely,
we can get in contact to you with?
Yeah, so I use Instagram the most actively. So my Instagram handle for Circus is Disaster Clown. As a clown that just creates disasters, because that is how I call it. So, Disaster Clown. And then if folks are interested in my visual art, that's ReneeRENDE.Mac, M-A-K, on Instagram. And then my circus website is ReneeMacCircus.com. So folks can always just kind of connect with me there. I love connecting with other artists. This industry, while there's many challenges with it, and like challenges that we take upon ourselves, and it like can really beat us down at times, It's also one of the most like heartwarming industries where people just they just want to create and they want to connect with you, and I think it's really beautiful.
Absolutely. That's very well said. It's very well said.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please reach out if you have any comments, any questions. We love hearing from you. And until next time, thank you.